This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A new era begins at Western Michigan University tomorrow. It will be the first day on the job as president for Edward Montgomery. The Board of Trustees voted in April to make him the school's ninth president. John Dunn is retiring after 10 years leading Western. Montgomery comes from Georgetown University, where he served as an economics professor and dean of the McCourt School of Public Policy. Montgomery has had a long career in higher education, with a couple of stints in government with the Obama and Clinton administrations. Montgomery joined us for an interview that originally aired in May. Welcome to WMUK and to Western Michigan University.
Thank you very much. Very glad to be here today.
So let's go back a little bit in terms of your background. Where did you grow up?
Well, I actually, that's a good question. I'm a little bit like Abraham Lincoln in the sense that I was born in New York, but I lived there 9 months. So I'm not really a New Yorker. We then moved to Minnesota, where I spent till about second grade. And then I think where I would say I grew up is really Pittsburgh. That was sort of our third location, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and was there through college.
And your father, David Montgomery, was a pretty prominent labor historian. How much influence did that have on the path you took for your career?
He was very central to it, both because he was an intellectually curious person, wanted to know about the world, wanted to think about how his scholarship could actually make the world a better place. And he was a person who was very much committed to social justice. And so thinking about issues of workers and improving working conditions, making life better, has been sort of the central focus for me. And while he was a historian and I'm an economist, labor, workers, individuals, making life a little bit better has been a central focus of both of our lives.
So were you then at a relatively young age when you figured out, I'd like to pursue a career in academia?
No, actually, it wasn't. my dad, when I was really young, was originally a machinist. And he had done that partly because he had a commitment to working folks and wanted to help unionize and promote unions. And he originally was doing that at the shop level. Then he moved to academia as an alternate sort of course path and studying workers and sort of his trajectory. And so academia wasn't always our central to our household. Me, when I first went to college, I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do, probably like most college freshmen, and came to the conclusion that maybe I wanted to try the business world. So my first job was actually at Eastman Kodak Company in Rochester, New York, where I worked as a junior executive.
And so when did you then kind of make that transition into higher education, teaching, research, et cetera?
Yeah. So after being at Kodak, I said, what I really would like to do is have the kind of ability to set your own agenda, to think about the issues which were central to you. And academia offered that course. And so I left Kodak and went back to school and got my PhD. And that sort of started my career in the early 1980s as an economics professor and been fascinated and enjoyed it ever since.
And you have held positions at a number of schools, including you had a stop in Michigan before you came back to Kalamazoo.
Yeah. My first job was at Carnegie Mellon University back in Pittsburgh. And then I left from there and came to Michigan State, where I was there from the late 80s to the early 1990 before going on to University of Maryland. So I was spent some time in Michigan in East Lansing and loved that experience there.
At some point along the way, did you start saying to yourself, well, being a professor's fine and I like teaching and I like research, but I want to find something in university or college administration for a stop in my career?
Well, actually, I came to college and university administration after taking a detour to actually be able to apply my scholarship. So having been a professor, having been an economist, I wanted to be able to put some more of it into practice. And so that's when I joined the Clinton administration and had a number of positions, chief economist and eventually the deputy secretary. So that was my first exposure to administration. And that got me, I developed a bit of a taste for it, came back to academia from that experience, resumed my scholarship, resumed my teaching. And the dean of the college that I was in said, come on, Ed, come and join me. I have a new associate dean position, and we'll have some fun, great fun working together. And I was like, well, I don't know if I want to do academic administration. And he said, no, we'll be great. And so I came and I joined him, and 3 months later he quit. So
so there was a promotion waiting for
so
you.
So a promotion then became available, and I said, well, I'm here. Let's keep trying it. And it sort of started a path and a career for me, which has been absolutely wonderful. So
you mentioned that you served in the Clinton administration for a little bit, and then, of course, you also worked for President Obama. Now, the title that gets thrown around is Auto Czar, but explain exactly what your job was.
Okay. I was the director of recovery for auto communities and workers. And so the auto task force had sort of two big parts. One was to think about and help restructure General Motors and Chrysler, and to think about suppliers and the industry in general and what they needed to be successful. And then there was a piece that recognized that as that restructuring was going on, there were going to be workers who and plants and businesses which were not going to be part of that. And so how do you help them recover? How do you help them get back employment? How do you help communities that might be affected by closures get back on its feet and work with a whole variety of federal agencies, the state government, local governments, to devise strategies to bring resources to bear? It's that second piece that I was in charge of. So while I was a member of the task force, most of my work was working with a variety of federal agencies and state governments, local economic development people, businesses, and worker groups.
The auto industry itself seems to be doing much better these days. I suppose maybe some of those communities are still struggling to catch up to where they were. Do you think that there are lessons for how the auto industry was rescued, if that's maybe the right word, what we did for the workers, what we did for the communities, that can be applied more broadly to other industries, and maybe even some lessons in there for higher education?
I think there are. I mean, you're absolutely right that conditions are much better than they were in 2009, 2010, during the height of the crisis. And while things are better, you can't understate the pain and the suffering that went with the restructuring, losing your job, losing pension benefits and health care benefits, suppliers and dealers who had been in the business, some of whom were not able to continue. Those costs are real. The communities in Michigan and Indiana and Ohio had double-digit unemployment rates. They've come down. They're not where we want them to be, but they've come down. Workers are getting jobs. Now the question is, can they get good jobs that pay and allow them to support? So I think the Obama transition effort certainly helped that. It certainly, without it, I don't believe General Motors and Chrysler would be around and be employing people, and the suppliers and that count on them wouldn't be as strong as they are now. And so there are some lessons there about what you can do. You know, I think you want to be careful about government intervening all the time, because that can promote excessive risk-taking, can promote corporations not being responsible for their own future. But I think the experiment said we can help ease that process, make transitions better than they have to be. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and it went through the steel changes. And there was nobody to help it. And while Pittsburgh's back on its feet, it took 20, 25 years. And I think being part of something that could speed that process doesn't make it easy, doesn't make it trivial, doesn't make it not painful, but can speed the process, I think, is an important role, and government has a role to play in that.
So when you had a position in the Clinton administration, or when you were serving on this auto task force for the Obama administration, did you always say to yourself, at some point, I'm getting back to higher education? Or were there times that you thought, you know, maybe government service is the place I should be?
You know, certainly in the case in the Clinton administration, and I think in the Obama administration, both times I always retained. I went on leave from my academic positions. I always thought I would come back. For me, I have multiple interests and multiple ways to feed that passion. And government service is one of those ways to feed the passion and to be of service, but so is academia. And every time I've come back to academia, it reminds me of what I loved when I first started down there. I love to be able to do scholarship and engage with really smart people. I love to be part of the process of helping students realize their potential. As a faculty member, as a teacher, you get to see the light bulb go on. You get to see people's eyes light light up and you get to see those aha moments. That's wonderful. And it's one person at a time. But government service is also a way to help people. They may not know you are the person who helped them, but your way to help people realize their potential. And so both of those to me have been equally wonderful experiences.
So then, speaking of interests, at what point did you find out that there was an opening at Western Michigan University? And did you say, you know, I might be the right guy to be their next president?
Well, I originally got contacted by the search firm who was running it. Even though my son was here at Western Michigan, he didn't say, "Dad, you should go for the presidency." But so I got contacted by the search firm at the beginning of the year, and me and my wife had some serious conversations about what's the next chapter. She's a Michigan girl, and so there was certainly an attraction for her to coming home and being near her family with our son, and sort of thinking about the experience he went to, it became more and more of an interesting and attractive proposition. And then, quite frankly, meeting the search committee, getting to talk to the trustees, to me, was a real eye-opening experience. The passion they have for this institution made it just an overwhelmingly attractive proposition.
I think when people first heard that you were the pick at Western, there was a kind of reaction of, well, you know, what's the tie here? Of course, we find out you actually have, as you mentioned, your wife being from Michigan, not too far from right here originally, your son attending Western, and then you've also done some work with the Upjohn Institute in Kalamazoo.
Yeah. So actually, going back to my time in Pittsburgh, I started working with Randy Ebert, who runs the Upjohn Institute here, on how do cities and areas do adjustment to change, and when they have a major employer goes down. Initially with steel, but Randy started thinking about what happened when the Upjohn Corporation pulled out of Kalamazoo. And so being involved here, thinking about how do small and medium-sized communities adjust has been a connection I've had going back to my Michigan State days in the 80s. And so I got to be in this community sometimes. As we've started talking about the experience, it turns out I have more connections. Three of my wife's cousins are Bronco alums. Obviously, our son is here. She's from just down the road in Portland. So I think we have a lot of initial connections, but we're looking to build even more.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We are bringing you a rebroadcast of an interview with Edward Montgomery, who will become Western Michigan University's 9th president tomorrow. He replaces John Dunn, who is retiring after a decade leading Western. The interview with Montgomery originally aired in May. So what do you see yourself bringing to the job? I mean, as you said, you've got a pretty varied experience through your career. So what do you think that means for when you actually sit behind the desk as Western Michigan University president beginning in August?
Well, I think having spent 30 years in academia, 30 plus years in academia, I realize that universities are only as strong as the faculty and the staff who are there. And so you need to empower those groups, empower faculty, empower staff to be as creative as they already naturally are, and take that direction. Take those ideas and shape them and form them to a direction for leading universities forward. So that recognition about the importance of our faculty and staff, the recognition that why we're here is both to create new knowledge and create new forms of expression, but also, most fundamentally, to teach our students and to help them realize their potential. So I bring that long career trajectory, and then realizing that not only are universities important for the people at the university, but they're important for the communities that they're embedded in. They're important both as a source of jobs and economic activity, but also a source of ideas and culture and attraction. And so we have an obligation to help and be part of the solution in our local community as well as the global community. And my experience both in academia and in government showed how important universities can be in playing that second role of being an active participant in the community and making the area and the region around them stronger for it.
Do you anticipate that there is a learning curve in being the president of a university the size of Western?
Absolutely. I have to come, as I said, as my first priority is and learn who are the players, what are the ideas that are in the community, what are the strengths and weaknesses in different departments and areas, and so the job one has to start with learning to see who the people are, who you can work with, how do you build those kinds of relationships, how do you take the ideas that are percolating from the bottom up, shape them and form them, and make it into a strategy. So that is absolutely job one. If you come in and you think you know it all, if you come in and you think you can direct it all from the top, you're going to be a failure. You really need the help of the community to help us realize our potential.
But do you come in with a vision, in other words, an idea of where you would like to see Western be in, say, 5 or 10 years, and then it's a question of meeting the people and getting them together? Or do you come in more with the idea of, well, eventually we're going to get to some things, and maybe I want to hear some ideas about what people think Western should be in 5 or 10 years?
I have a strong desire, and I've sort of encapsulated it, is how do we become the institution of choice? We become the institution of choice by having strong academic programs that attract our students, having support for the students so that they can succeed while at Western Michigan, and so that when students are thinking about will they get a chance, where can they succeed, where can they get prepared for their careers, and where can they be prepared for life, Western Michigan is the obvious answer to that. I want us to be the institution of choice for faculty, thinking about where can they do their research, where can they be successful, for staff who says, I have some of my career ambitions, where can those be realized? And so that's part of what it means to be the institution of choice. And I also want us to be an institution of choice for the community. So when businesses are thinking, where can I go get help? Where can I get good workers? Where can I be part of a vibrant, active community? Western becomes the answer. And when the community around us, both locally and the nation, thinks about where can you get solutions, Western is the answer. And so what we need is, what are the tactics to enhance that? We've got great potential. We've already started that. But where are the avenues where we can make the most strides in the short term? How do we build and continue a culture of wanting to continually advance? And now I need people's help to say, all right, the way we can make most progress, the first place we should start is activity A, B, C, or strategy A or D. That's the kind of stuff that I need to understand from the people here.
You've said that one of the things you really need to do is get to know the students, the faculty, the staff here at Western. Is that management by walking around and just kind of introducing yourself to people having coffee? Is it setting up sort of, more formal get-togethers where, people can kind of come and get to know, oh, well, the president's going to be there. I'd like to at least get 5 minutes of his time.
It's both. And so, part of the reason I'm here today and yesterday, I came in and I had a meeting with a group of staff from across the campus to talk about issues of safety. What are the programs? What are we doing to make sure that this is an environment where people feel safe, where they can realize their potential? And then I had a meeting with a group to talk about sustainability. How are we honoring our commitment towards sustainability? And then I had a meeting with the senior staff from across the campus to say, what are the different ways we can work together as a group to promote Western Michigan as an institution of choice, and starting those conversations and having more conversations with the board so I can be systematically introduced to key constituents, key areas, and then as well as opening ourselves up to more general meetings with people. So some of it will be walking around, and some of it will be a very sort of practice, strategic sort of think about who do you have to meet, how do you start building those kinds of relationships.
You say you have a good description for your management style?
I think I'm a very open person. I really want people to give me their ideas, even when they challenge me. I think that makes me better. I'm not the font of all wisdom. I really do need that kind of interaction and that give and take. And so I like to delegate. But I like to delegate with a strategy and a plan in mind and then say, look, you're a smart, intelligent person. You figure out, you know how to do your job. Once we've agreed what's the path, you work on the tactics and the best way to accomplishment. So it's giving people the license to do their job the best ways they can, holding them accountable at the beginning where we both work together to say, where are we going? And at the end, did we get there? That's sort of how I put it in a nutshell.
So we mentioned that you had some positions in both the Clinton and the Obama administrations. We live in a pretty hyper-partisan time. And, of course, we live at a time where the Republicans now control both houses of Congress, the presidency, the governor's office in Michigan, and both the state House and Senate. Does having a partisan tag on you in any way mean that there's some extra work to do in, you know, making sure that you establish relationships with the people who, you know, may hold the purse strings, for example, in Lansing?
I think it's absolutely critical as a university administrator to make sure that you are not seen as a partisan individual. You can have your own personal views and your own personal politics, but this is an institution that represents the state. So we need to have strong ties to both Democratic legislators and Republican legislators because we're about serving the men and women of the state, and that's their mission, too. And so it doesn't have to be blue or red. It's about how do we work together to serve the sons and daughters of the state of Michigan and the area around in a most effective way. So I also have to work with the business community. I have to work with organized labor. They don't always agree. They're not always on the same page on every issue. But we need to work with both of them to fulfill our mission, and the university should be open to and figure out strategy to do it. And that's a little bit of what I did with the Auto Task Force effort, because that was about working with local communities, local governors, mayors, some of whom were Democrat, some were Republican. I was from the Democratic administration, but we could not have succeeded in any of the things we did if it was about partisanship. We could only succeed if it's about people.
So we mentioned that your son recently graduated from Western Michigan University. Congratulations to him and to you as well. I'm wondering if you think you might have someone there who can be a pretty good source of information, someone who might be willing to tell you things about the student perspective that you wouldn't get out of a student that we might just stop outside here at Friedman Hall. They might not want to say it to the the president of the university. Might you get a more open and free discussion with your son when it comes to what Western can do and what it can do better?
Well, my son is certainly not a shy person, and so he always has shared with his parents his views on school and on us and various other things like that. So that's a great resource. But, you know, my in general, I think 19, 20, 23-year-old students are generally not shy folks in terms of sharing their opinions and what's working and what's not working for them. And you have to ask, and you have to be genuinely interested, and we are. I look forward to that. I'm sure I will get extra coaching from my son.
Let me ask you about at least a couple issues which are constantly facing colleges and universities. One of the big ones is, of course, college affordability right now. Mm-hmm. What can be done at the university level? There's a lot of components here, of course, you know, student loans, there's government funding. But at the university level, what can be done to focus on making sure that, you know, as many students as possible can afford to come here and get an education?
Well, you know, I think Western embodies what public universities are about: access, giving opportunities to a wide range of individuals. And so our key part of maintaining that commitment to access is affordability. It's not the only part, because not only do we have to get you here, we have to make sure you graduate and come out the backside, come out with a diploma. That's part of our mission and should be part of our strategy as well. But on the front end, on the access, obviously, we have to work as aggressively as we can with the state legislature to make the case of why a commitment to public education and state funding is an important attribute of maintaining a high-quality education environment, that it's good not only for the individuals who go to the university, but it's good for the communities and the state that they live in the area that they reside in. And so that takes a certain commitment. And so we have to work. We can't give up. The trend is in a downward direction pretty much across the board for many states where a declining share of the funding is coming from the state. But that's not destiny. That's just history. And so we should work aggressively on that. We also have to make sure that we're careful stewards of the dollars that we have, that we continually look at how we operate, the processes that we do, the investment we make, where we spend the money, to make sure we're maximizing the bang for the buck, that we're getting the most educational outcome, research outcome for those dollars. And so that requires a continual rethinking on our part.
of how we're doing things, how we're operating, so to make sure we're using money. And then the third thing we have to work on is how do we go about growing the base? And you grow the base by thinking about philanthropy, grant support, other ways that which you can bring in additional resources from those who share your vision for the university, share your vision about what's important and the central role that Western Michigan plays in people's lives. Many of them are alums, but some won't be alums, who say, yes, this is an institution I want to invest in. And as you get those kinds of investments, that gives you another way to get additional resources to maintain your education program at an affordable level.
I've been here long enough that you are the fifth president of Western Michigan University that I have had the honor to interview. And the previous four that I talked to all said, well, we need to do better with state funding. So obviously, this is a perpetual issue. Is there a new approach here? Is there anything that is different in 2017 from, say, 20 years ago in terms of making the case for additional state funding?
Well, here's what I'd say is increasingly different. Higher education in general is more and more important in the success of individuals, of communities, of areas in their economy. We are in a knowledge-based world, and finding ways to make sure that we have educated workers, that we have companies that can innovate is absolutely critical for our economic success, and it's becoming more and more that way. And we play, higher education plays, Western Michigan plays a central role in that. And so part of the pitch is maybe it's repeating it, maybe it's beating the same drum, maybe it's just beating it louder, but you can't give that up because it's too important. It's too important for the individuals, and it's too important for the communities that we live in to just say, no, we should abandon this. And so while I have no delusions that Ed will show up and the world will change and everything will be rosy and the state will triple the funding and all those things, but you have to keep working at it. You have to keep working at it, and you have to keep working on it. And you work at it with the business community. You work at it with the legislative community to build the case to show why those investments pay off for the region and the areas.
I'm reminded of interviewing Dieter Henneke when he came back and was going to be interim president while they searched and eventually found John Dunn. And he said that, you know, the new president, I think in his words, needed to be able to perform a couple miracles every day, be enormously wealthy, et cetera. On a more serious note, what he said, though, is that there has become a greater need to find private money and to increase endowments, et cetera. And do you see that as crucial to the university's future, that private fundraising is going to have to make up for whatever is not coming from the state and in order to try to hold down tuition?
You know, I believe the numbers are something like only 3% of the operating budget of Georgetown, of Western Michigan doesn't come either from tuition or from the state. And we've got to grow that slice. And philanthropy is a big piece of that. Getting outside grants is another piece of that. But philanthropy is the central core. And in terms of growing it from philanthropy, you say, well, who would give you money? Who would be excited? Your best source are alums. And that's been the great news about taking this job and meeting the community is the enthusiasm amongst the alumni community for the experience they had at Western Michigan and how it shaped their lives makes them a natural place to go for additional support so that we can continue the next generation getting the kind of experience they have. And we just need to make investments to make sure we have the capacity. We need to make sure we go to make the case to them, because just as states have different places to put their money, students have different choices of institutions, donors have different places they can put their philanthropy. So we have to make the case about where there's dollars, how they would be leveraged, how they would be used, how they could be impactful to keep both the doors open for access, to help students get out on the other side, to make sure that we're helping the community that we're engaged in, we're making this the institution of choice.
Edward Montgomery will become Western Michigan University's 9th president on August 1st. Thank you very much for your time. Look forward to more conversations in the future, and good luck.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Edward Montgomery becomes Western Michigan University's 9th president tomorrow. That interview originally aired in May. You can find a link to the interview with retiring Western Michigan University President John Dunn that aired in June on our website, wmuk.org.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.